This episode of Generally Famous contains strong language.
Kia ora, Aotearoa, and welcome to Generally Famous Stuff Podcast. I'm Simon Bridges, and every week I talk to a generally famous but always interesting guest about life, love, and what makes them tick. Today's guest is one of our greatest New Zealand heavyweight boxers, from amateur and Commonwealth medalist to 12 years as a pro, winning an impressive 29 fights, 22 by knockout, and at his peak in the top handful, I think I'm right to say number 6 at one point in the world with a heap of titles. Currently, he's a businessman, fitness entrepreneur, celeb, partner, and dad. Welcome, Shane Cameron.
Oh, wow. After that introduction, I can't wait to hear myself speak.
Was it all sort of right? Did I get any of those facts, mate, basically
nailed
right?
Nailed it.
Fantastic. It's amazing what you can do with Wikipedia. That is awesome. Hey, I want to understand what it's like being a top boxer, right? So 34 fights, professional fights, to say 29 wins, 22 by KO, from sort of 02 to 2014. Tell me about how you prepped for a top fight, your training, your diet, your sleep. What's it like? Is it a 3-month process, 3 weeks? How long are you going before you get there?
Yeah. Especially for the top fights, it's a 12 week training camp.
Yep.
When you start, you build up, you start with 4-round fights, and then you build up to 6-round fights and 8-round fights and then 10 and 12 round fights, you know, so by the time you get the 12-round fight. So 12 rounder is generally you're fighting for a title. If it's a 10 rounder, then it's still a big fight, but it's not a title on the line. So it has to be 12 rounds for a title to be on the line. So in terms of preparation, like, yeah, you don't have a life. You just zone in, you train. I used to train 3 times a day for 5 days a week and then 2 times for the other 2 days. So we still got plenty of training in. And the biggest thing why I trained so hard, Simon, was that's what built my confidence.
That's the mental part of it as well.
That's 95% of it. You know, like, doesn't matter how good your hair looks or how flash your muscles look and how big they look, it doesn't mean nothing, man. You know, it's what your head is telling you when you're walking to the ring. You know, how
and
confident
if you felt like you'd had too many hamburgers and you hadn't done enough skipping and boxing and, you know, weights and the things that you needed to do, you'd go in feeling bad and unconfident.
Yeah, exactly. And everything we do in life, you need to be confident, you know, and then especially in boxing, because, man, that guy on the other side of the ring there, he wants to take you apart, you know, and if you're walking to the ring and you haven't done the work, how confident are you?
That said, I mean, if you've got, I don't mean to go here, but it's like if you've gone into a boxing match, the ring, and you were confident, you're in peak condition, and it just, I presume there's a lot of times it just doesn't go remotely where you thought, how you thought it would go.
Oh, 100%, yeah. Like, I walked to the ring, all of my fights, I've walked to the ring thinking that same thought, he ain't going to beat me, I've done everything, possible, but sometimes it's just not your night, you know?
And many, to be fair, and professional, it's only a handful, but.
Because, you know, all you need is the opponent to be equal or same, had a better camp. And it comes down to the timing too, because sometimes you can overtrain and then it's peaking at the right time. So you train your ass off for 12 weeks. And then as long as you don't train too hard, because you might become the 11th week and then you start peaking, you know, but you don't really know until you think, I'm ready to go now, but it's still a week out. And then you still keep training. And then you start, by the time the fight comes, you're already down on the, you're already sort of the drop down. You know, you can't train at maximum training for 12 weeks or 14 weeks.
You overdo it.
Yeah, exactly.
And were you serious about what you eat, or didn't it have to be too bad, or?
I had 80% of my fights as a professional at heavyweight, and then I dropped down and I eventually.
So what did that mean for you? You had to make sure you were heavier?
Yeah. So I didn't need to be heavier, but like I'm not naturally a big guy for the heavyweight division anyway. So I campaigned most of my fights around sort of 100 to 104 kilos.
And what would heavy be in a heavyweight?
Around maybe you're averaging around 110.
Yeah.
110, 120, where I was sort of the smaller guy, but. You know, I still had some good heat on my punches, so I still managed to put a lot of them over. And then I dropped down to cruiserweight, which I had to drop 14 kilos to make that division below, but that's where I got my world title shot.
Amazing. And, you know, you've mentioned the mental side of it, but, like, how much mental prep is going into fight? I mean, I presume you've got a bit of a team around you, and is one of them like, are they, you know, are they constantly telling you, you know, you're a piece of scum or you're amazing, you know, you're doing well, you know, you're going to kill this guy? What happens mentally to get you in the zone before you walk into the ring?
I suppose like throughout the camp we watch video analysis, so we do video analysis on making sure I'm doing the things that I'm meant to be doing, just by filming our training sessions and reviewing it and seeing how I'm going with sparring. Because sparring, you do a lot of sparring before the fight, you know, do like 100 to 120 rounds of sparring, and that's just like a fight every day, you know, so your body takes a bit of a battering, you know, but at the same time you got to do your video on your opponent just to make sure that you execute a fight plan. And in terms of confidence, man, like we didn't really have anyone around us, but it was just, I just knew that I needed to be fit and I needed to tick the right boxes for me to be confident come fight night.
Right. And you just mentioned something else I was going to ask you, which is, you know, that terms of so you did have a fight plan or a strategy.
Yeah.
And what I'm just trying to work out is that kind of like, how complicated is that? Is that kind of like, you know what, if I block more and punch more, than the other guy, I'm going to win? Or is it kind of much more detailed than that? Give me a sense of that.
Yeah, so it's more, so I might be finding someone that's sort of like 6'5", 6'6", and he's got a really good jab, you know, and I'm sort of 6'2", and I'm like shorter arms. So then I need to try and take his jab away from him. And that'd be like by controlling my range or making sure if I'm in the firing zone, I'm moving my head or catching his punches. Because if I'm not moving my head or catching his punches, they're going to land right on my face. You know, so it's about controlling that range. So take away his jab. That's his best asset. So if I can take away his best asset, which is his jab, then I'm going to do all right in that fight. If you know what I mean? But if I can't control my range and I'm catching his jabs and I'm just eating leather, it's not going to be a good night at the office for me.
And your game plan, your strategy depends on the type of guy you're up against. If he's a short, stout, powerful guy, that's quite different than a taller, lean guy, and you will quite significantly change the way you box him.
Yeah.
What do you do with a short, muscly guy?
Oh, shorter guy.
I mean, I'm thinking I'm going to get to him, but Tyson.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously a buddy animal in the ring. Well, with you or him, I'd last about 1 second. What a guy of that sort of stature, what are you doing?
Someone of that sort of stature who comes forward and he's really aggressive. I spent 3 weeks sparring Mike, so I know exactly what he's like. So you got to have a good defense. And then when he gets, because he wants to pressure you, he just wants to bully you. So eventually he'll get you on the ropes. And then what are you going to do? Then you need to have a good defense, or you need to be able to block, and then counter back on him or get off the ropes, you know, or be good in the close range of fighting, you know. There's no like tit, tat, tit, tat on the outside, because he wants to try and close that range and then beat the hell out of you.
Yeah, I'm not just saying this because I'm sitting next to you and we're talking boxing. My favorite quote in the universe, if it applies to, you know, obviously do a bit of business, a bit of politics or sport, is a Mike Tyson quote. Everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face, right? And by Mike, I'm sure that's true. You met him, you trained with him.
Yeah.
What was he like?
Yeah, he was a good dude. He was a good, interesting dude. He's all or nothing. You either like you or he doesn't, you know.
So obviously he liked you?
Yeah, I think so, because when I sparred with him and then
probably. Well, it didn't last a day. You were there for a while.
Yeah.
And sort of camped with him, were you?
We trained together. We weren't in the same camp. I don't know where he stayed, but we stayed somewhere else. I trained with him every day for about 2.5 weeks. And then 6 years later, I was in Las Vegas with a mate, and we were drinking in a bar. And then we met this this guy, and then he looks at me and goes, "Oh, you look like a bit of an athlete. What do you do?" I said, "Oh, boxing." He goes, "Boxing? My boy's Mike Tyson." I'm thinking, "Oh, yeah, I'm sure he is." And I said, "Oh, yeah, I sparred Mike in Phoenix, Arizona back in 2005. He goes, Did you really spar my boy Mike?" I'm thinking, yeah. And then he goes, "Oh, I'll give him a ring. And then he comes over on his phone, Mike Tyson, ringing, no answer. Ringing again, no answer. I'm thinking, I don't know how genuine this dude is. So anyway, about 3 hours later, I said,
It was a good story, though, if he was BSing you, because he had his name in the phone.
Yeah.
So it's his dad?
No.
Just a mate.
So then I went to go and leave the bar with my mate, and then he goes, hey, I'll give you Mike's number. I think, who gives out Mike Tyson's number? So I didn't have my phone, but my mate had this phone, and I said, I'll put this number in your phone. And then I was thinking, oh, I'm not going to text him. Hey, man, you remember me, the white guy that come down from New Zealand to spy you in 2005? I just said, oh, hey, Mike, it's Shane Cameron. I'm in town for a couple of days. It'd be cool to catch up. And then he texts my mate's phone. Rings my mate's phone in the morning. I'm in his room. Oh, sorry, I'm in my room. He's in his room. He's like, it's Shane there, man. It's Shane there. And he's like, he's in his room. Who's this? He goes, it's Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson. Then he went straight into, what the fuck happened with that Danny Green fight, man? He should knock that motherfucker out. So he must have been watching my career, following my career. And when I had my world title fight against Danny Green, he's watching it and he's just like, what the fuck happened there? He should have knocked the motherfucker out. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
There's a number of things about that. Number one, you have got his voice down well, which is like, talk about the most sort of inconsistent voice to sort of body in the universe, right? It's amazing how these guys, you look at him, he should be talking like this, man. You know, he's got this high-pitched voice.
Yeah.
So was he, from your perception, was he sort of a... Like, is he a friendly-ish guy or is he a staunch guy?
Friendly dude. Like, so even when my mate rang me, he goes, man, you need to come up and ring Mike. Mike said to ring him. So I went up to the room and I rang his phone. The first thing he says, he goes, how you doing, Shane? You all right, man? And I said, I'm all right, Mike. How you doing, brother? Good, good, good. Like, and then he went straight into, what the fuck happened with that Danny Green fight, man? You shouldn't,
And that was the other thing I was going to say to you is, who, in your view, was the greatest or is the greatest boxer of all time?
There's probably two guys, but if we're going to pick the out of those two, it would be Evander Holyfield.
Yeah, mate.
Evander Holyfield in my eyes.
Why?
Just because I was a big fan of him because he's a similar stature to me.
And he was sort of, you're a bit slightly younger than me. He was sort of our guy when we were growing up, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was around the Mike Tyson area where Mike Tyson's this infamous bully, but he got bullied by Evander Holyfield, and Evander Holyfield become 5-time heavyweight world champion, undisputed cruiserweight world champion. So, yeah,
an ultimate athlete,
absolutely, yeah. And the other guy would be Lennox Lewis. Like they're just guys that are just like, man, I'm not really worried about fighting anyone, but like, now looking at them, Lennox Lewis would probably be one that I wouldn't like to step in the ring with
because they're a cut above.
They're just a cut above. Even like look at Lennox Lewis, the guys that he lost to, out of his three losses, he come back and knocked them out anyway.
You didn't mention there, I mean, the one that's, isn't he reputed to be, I'm a boxing expert, but like you, I suspect not in the same way, but, I remember there were good times with my dad, we watched those heavyweight fights on TV, and all of those ones you're referring to, but you didn't mention Muhammad Ali.
Oh, yeah.
And I suppose you didn't, I think some would say Tyson.
Yeah,
potentially.
Yeah, Tyson, but like he got done twice by Evander Holyfield. Yes. That's just my personal opinion, So if you talk about the era today, like Tyson Fury, the Gypsy King, like he's.
Have you watched that reality show? Is it like a TV show on Netflix or something with him?
Yeah,
I actually haven't seen it, so this is a terrible. But my wife said it was brilliant.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen the whole thing, but there's a few series on there. He's interesting.
Interesting cat. Have you met any of these or other big timers? I imagine it's sort of at one level, it's like all these things. It's a big world we live in, but at the top of boxing, and you got pretty high up, you would be sort of rubbing shoulders with them at a level, would you? Mm. Or were they a different generation?
Tyson was probably the biggest guy that I rubbed shoulders with, and Tua, I put Tua in that realm too. Yes. Like he's an absolute beast, even though we.
How heavy was he in his prime? What did he go into the ring at?
Probably 112 to 115. Yep. You know, 112 to 115 at 5'9". Tyson's about 5'11". So, just a beast. Just an absolute beast, like one guy that's just very unfortunate to not become world champion,
Would that be your least favourite fight?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Because what? I presume you went in confident?
Every time, yeah, went in confident and like, I don't know, it was a different, like, that fight there, man, just got caught, man, but Tua, yeah. don't know. Like, I've had two major fights where one was my first amateur fight, 92 fights ago. And then my fight at the Commonwealth Games, where I was so nervous. I never experienced nerves like it. I don't know what. I just, like, I don't know. I'd done all the training, done everything. I just didn't know how to. I was like, oh my God. So, you know, I went out there. My first fight, I won. And then the second time I had major nerves was at the Commonwealth Games at the semifinals. And they just beat me. The nerves beat me. And then I fight Tua many, many fights later for one of the biggest fights of my career. And I wasn't even nervous. I'm in the change room morning and wandering around. I think, oh, I'm not even nervous. I think, oh, this feels quite good. But like, but it was just like, you know, when you're not nervous, you're not sharp.
That can be a problem in itself.
Big problem. Like everything is slow. But when you're nervous, everything is sharp.
Was there something there where just, you know, you went in with a game plan and it didn't, because my sense, I watched it a week or two back. I mean, I can remember it, you know, fight of the century in Hamilton there, but he dominated you. I hesitate saying that with a guy with muscles like yours who's not too far from me, but he dominated you, and it was second round, wasn't it?
You were lucky to survive the first round.
No, you've probably technical KO'd in the first one. So what went wrong there? Was it just your game plan was quickly thrown off and he was on you, or?
Oh, he just caught me. He just caught me because I threw a right hand, and then as I brought it back, he just jumped in and threw his famous left hook, and that was it. I don't really know what had happened until I watched the replay the next day, you know. So it was just, you know, it's just one of those things in boxing where one punch can just change the whole fight. Yeah, and then like I did, like, and he did it to me, and I've done it to many too, and I've done it to Monty Barrett, the guy that dropped David, put him on the canvas for the first time in his career, and then beat David, you know, and then I got that rematch. So not a rematch, and then I got the fight Monty Barrett after that. Everyone thinking, who the hell, how can you beat Monty Barrett when you try and beat the man? Sorry, you.
Yeah, he beat the guy that beat you.
That beat me, yeah, exactly, you know. So it was one of my easiest fights, and just the timing was good on me. I just, everything was peaking on the right night, and I put him to sleep in round four, you know, and he was out, so... Man, and there was one, just can just take one punch.
And the thing about the tour, man, is, you know, you on your way up when he was probably bigger, were continually sort of sledging him in terms of, you know, let's fight, are you scared of me kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But my sense is, I might have this wrong, but my sense is when you two did fight, you were actually really on the way up. And I suppose the question is, did you need the fight? In hindsight, would have been better not to have had it, because you were on your way to a title shot at that point, weren't you?
Yeah, that's a very good question.
Too late now, but...
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, there's a story around that, because when I called him out, I called him out in Christchurch. I was building my career. No one really knew who I was. I'm trying to stamp my authority. I call it David Tua. Didn't know whether the fight would happen, but just wanted. I needed him more than he needed me. He didn't need me. No. Who are you, Shane? You need to prove yourself, man. Yes. You need to prove yourself. So I proved myself. I kept going, and then become ranked number six heavyweight in the world.
Yes, which is an awesome achievement.
Yeah, thank you. And then on the Sunday paper, he's calling. The roles are reversed. He's calling me out. I didn't need him, like what you just said. I'm thinking, I don't really need this fight now, you know. But he needed me more than I needed him, you know, because I was close to fighting for heavyweight world title.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, but I'm a man of my word. I'll, you know.
You'd do it.
Yeah, and I still thought I'd win, you know. And how wrong was I?
And just on that, I mean, a couple of general questions, but they're very relevant to that fight. How do you, I mean, I have no comprehension, mate. I was born a wimp, okay? I'm not too proud to tell you that. The fights I've been in at high school didn't go well for me. You can read about that in my book. But how do you, you're taking a lot of pain. I mean, these are punches, in my senses, that, you know, they would knock me out with one, and you're taking, you know, dozens of them in a round, let alone over the 12 of them. So what is there any secret to that, or do you're just building up with your sparring and you don't think about it?
No, you don't think about it. And it's not like someone grabbing my skin and pinching it with them, that would hurt more than getting punched in the face, honestly. Like, and because you, as a boxer, you're used to getting punched in the face.
Conditioned.
Yeah, 100%. Like sometimes some punches are harder than others, and I don't want to get caught with too many of those.
Ridiculous question, but how would you go right now going into that, do you think? Because I presume you're, I mean, I know you're still, we're going to talk about it. You've got a boxing gym.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big part of your life and you're probably training a lot of people and all that. But are you, would you be conditioned for a, not necessarily, you know, world heavyweight, I appreciate that, but would you be conditioned for a reasonably serious fight right now?
No way. I'd probably last maybe one or two rounds.
Yeah.
You know, just because. Yeah, I might look all right, but my lungs can't keep up. I don't do any boxing.
That fitness, the conditioning, and technically, I presume you slow down a lot.
But my knowledge is
there.
Massive, more like probably twice than what when I was fighting.
Yes.
You know, because I've been coaching. I've designed an accredited boxing course where I coach personal trainers throughout the country. So I've understood a lot more of the science of the sport, you know, and I can do things I wish that I did when I was coming through the ranks. But then I don't have the hunger either, Simon. I don't have the hunger, man. Like, you need that hunger where, like, you do whatever it takes. And
well, you needed it more then.
You need that kill factor. Yeah, of course. You're in the kill sport, you know. So if you don't kill, you're going to be killed yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't have that no more, you know. So it's just Yeah.
I know, how interesting. It's a bit like riding a bike, but it's a bit like I can't anymore, right?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, because I've already told you, I'm a wimp. There's 50 things I'm used to. I was quite a good drummer.
Yeah.
Right? Played the drums well.
Yeah.
I still know it. I've still got good head knowledge, but it's almost the same. The conditioning and the speed and so on is just not there anymore, right?
Yeah.
So, but not that I was, you know, you were heavyweight, but they're very different. I was not a heavyweight of drumming. One other tour question I should have asked you. The other thing that was interesting, and look, it's a bit of a well-worn track. You've been asked this sort of stuff a bit, but I think it's just worth getting on the record and interesting. I mean, you guys... there was that, as you say, you know, you wanting him to fight, da 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 da, but it sort of became personal.
Yeah.
But my sense is, and so, you know, there was, I don't know if bad blood is too far, bad blood. But now, like, you're reconciled. I mean, is this a guy you've kind of, have you seen him in the last year or anything like that, or not really?
Yeah. You know, sort of catch up. Not that often, but yeah, interesting. So it would have been 7 years after the fight of the century. Yeah, I'm mowing the lawns one time, and I was like, man, I wouldn't mind inviting David around just to bring him around and just say, man, just sorry for some of the things that I said. You know, I know this is a fight game, and it happens, and I just wanted to catch up with him. You know, so he came around, him and his wife, and we got on the piss in my garage. And we're drinking tequilas and we're having a good laugh, and then he goes, you know what, Shane? What I was worrying about with you, he goes, your body shots. I go, well, fuck, you didn't let me throw one.
Yeah,
yeah, he just caught me. But you know, but anyway, just outside of that, it was just different times, man. Yeah, you know?
Because I presume the thing is, right, it's a bit like I don't know, two people in any kind of specialized game, you've got a lot in common.
Yeah.
You're two Kiwis who went near the top of boxing.
Yeah.
And as you say, you know, luck and fate and things play a role in it. He was, at some levels, he was unlucky because he was worth a winning title fight on the right day, at the right context.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. A lot of that comes down to a lot of the timing and I don't know why he never got another world title shot, but that's beyond me.
How I'm about to finish all of the technical questions about boxing and, you know, but one other thing I was just interested in is how long it would take you physically and I suppose emotionally to get over a fight.
Yeah.
And I suppose it was different if you won or lost, but like, was it, you know, you're battered and bruised and you had to go easy for a few weeks or what?
Yeah. Well, if I think about my first loss, you know, you're talking there, my first loss, I was 19 fights, 19 wins, 18 by knockout. And then I lost to a guy by Friday Ahunanya. And I got cut to bits, you know, like I got cut over both eyes, got cut up the middle, and then I cut underneath here. I suffered my first defeat in the 12th round. So I couldn't see for like maybe 10 days. So the sunny's on, I could just see, that was just like glimpse, you know. And then I had an operation. So in terms of healing, it can take, that's just physical stuff. That's, I don't care about that. But it's more the mental side and how you gotta pick yourself back up, you know, and believe in yourself and then come back and then get back on the horse and have the confidence to go back and do another fight, you know. So yeah. Just the
any tricks on that, or just it's just time and you just gotta keep telling yourself that you're the man, you know, you're gonna be good.
Yeah, just yeah. Well, yeah, say after that one it was just like I knew a big big reason why I lost that fight was because of the cuts. You know, I just got cut to bits and the blood was going through my eyes. I could hardly see, you know. Yes. So just one of those nights that can't, yeah, anyway. And with David, man, he just caught me. I knew I'm a better fighter. I know I'm a better fighter that stepped in the ring that night. So that gave me the confidence to keep going. And then eventually, but you need goals. So I've always been goal-driven, and my goal was to fight for a world title, you know, and I eventually got that, again, fighting Danny Green, you know, and that was my ultimate goal. And I was sort of, I should have really retired after that because, yeah, the career didn't go that good after that anyway. So,
but, you know, just, if you take it to a man, you won, what is it, 6 in a row after that. And then, yep. Fair play to you. Fantastic. And, actually, I've got another question. I don't mean to be overly serious about it, but it's the sort of thing I think about when I think about boxing. And if I was sitting here with my naughty, actually, they've just got in trouble. My two boys who are 9 and 11.
Send them to the boxing club.
Well, they play tennis, all right? So, you know, that's – and they, you know, I think about them and I think about boxing, and especially in the heavyweight division, which one level is, you know, pinnacle of sports. But, you know, dementia, Parkinson's, I think of Muhammad Ali. You're talking to me, you're smart, you're alert, but is it worth it? Have any of these things been a worry for you?
Not a major worry. Like, when you're in the sport of boxing, it's like, man, it was a sport that I loved, you know, and it's a sport that gave me opportunities. If I hadn't got into boxing, I definitely wouldn't be sitting here talking to you, Simon. No. I'd probably go back into farming.
Yep.
That's where it all started for me. And then I found boxing. And I'm like, oh, I love this sport. And it just really got me focused. It went from drinking 5-6 nights a week when I was in England.
Yep.
You know, fighting on the weekends. Didn't even know how to fight. It was like a jersey pulling competition, but it was just like, you know, boxing sort of got me on the straight and narrow, and man, just gave me some good, you know, I've always been driven. I've always had work ethic. Always had determination. You put those together and you can be a great businessman. You can be a great entrepreneur. And for me, it was give me great steed to become a great athlete.
And probably just on that, you know, if you hadn't gone the boxing route, you'd be farming in the East Coast or something.
Gisborne, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
The state of boxing now in New Zealand, how do you feel about it? You're still close to it with what you do. Is it as good as it's ever been? Better, worse? Where is it at?
That's a good question. I don't know whether it's better or worse. I think it's, it's pretty good. Actually, it's probably better than it has been for a long time. Yeah, it's a good point because normally, you know, there was David and I around that same for the era, but now you got Parker and you got David Naika and there's a few other boys, Andre McCullough. There's some good fighters, and it just comes down to there's a lot of good fighters in this country. And same with around the world, but it's the biggest thing is for them to get the right person, connect them with the right manager that has, like, say you get connected with Dean Lonergan, someone that's in the realm, and they have money, they can back the fighter.
Excuse the pun, but we probably punch above our weight. Yeah. We've actually got quite a pretty strong pedigree in boxing.
In boxing, yeah.
In a global sense, country, for 5 million people.
Yeah.
And globally, do you still follow it much? I mean, I must admit, maybe it's just because I've become, I don't know, fat and middle-aged, but it's not like when I was young, when we were sitting down and watching Holyfield and who's our main man with the deep fryer or whatever it is.
George Foreman.
And, you know, there's some awesome, there was some amazing. I'm not sort of in there. I don't see so much of that, but maybe that's just me. What do you think it's like in the world at the moment? Still a big time, serious sport that's got massive global reach, or is it?
Oh, it's got more reach now. You look and think about social media, you know, like when you're talking about these fights, watching them, firstly, you don't pay for them.
No.
They were free to air, you know, so that everyone watched them, you know, because it was free. But now nothing's free, you know.
No.
So it's massive now. Like when I was boxing, there was no Facebook or Instagram, you know. There was Facebook anyway, maybe towards the end. But like I never focused on it to like try and build a career or try and get followers and that. I didn't care, you know. But now it's a different setup now. Hey, you know, totally different world.
Today on Newsable, why more Kiwis are worrying about money as unemployment rises. Plus, South Samoa is cracking down on its dengue fever outbreak and the little peanut butter that could. We have all the details about the Kiwi food brand teaming up with NASA and heading to space. For everything that's worth talking about, find and follow Newsable wherever you get your podcasts.
thing about Parkin, taking nothing away from him, right?
Yeah.
But there'll be a few Parkers.
Yeah.
But he's the guy in the spot who's got the right people around
100%.
Him and so
yep.
on, right?
Yeah.
And then I think about boxing globally. It's got to be like that too, right? It's
yep.
true in most
yes.
big
yes.
sports. You know, you could be a cool kid from a great boxer with the best talent from, you know, some part of Africa or Eastern Europe, but you're not going to be in the zone the way you would if you were a young kid in Miami or something. I made
yeah.
that up,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just getting the opportunity. A lot of these young fighters and young athletes, man, it's just being spotted. You know, it's the same with rugby and all those sports. It's like some I'm probably a little bit different. I don't know. I can't compare. But boxing, it's like if someone gets spotted, you know, like Parker and then Tua, you know, got spotted, then someone can back them, you know, and then take them along because money talks. Money talks in terms of having the right backer, then they have the right connections with other big promoters globally. So for me, I had Cullen Investments, which own the Warriors, you know.
Amazing.
So they had big pockets, and they brought in my opponents from overseas, and that's where I got my ranking through the roof. But I had to win fights. So yeah, so that I understand that's a big part of it. So if you can be picked up by someone with some dollars,
yeah, it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And the other thing, you know. And again, I'm not the right guy, right? But you know, there's so many other contact codes or sports these days. You know, the various kickboxing styles around the world. How do you think about all of that stuff? If you had your time again, if you were doing it now, would you be in one of those as opposed to, you know, the old Queensbury rules boxing? That's or would it still be good old fashioned boxing?
Yeah. No, I'd still stick with boxing. But, you know, like I started late. I had my first amateur fight when I was 20 years of age, you know. You know, could have been different if I was starting younger, but would I change anything? Nah, I wouldn't change anything, mate.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change anything. I'm happy with how it's all panned out, but.
Fantastic. Yeah. And we're pouring a bit of water here because it's thirsty work, this talking about all this physical activity. I've got a few quick fires for you. Your favourite career fight?
Favourite career? Definitely fighting Monty Barrett, knocking him out in round 4.
Fantastic. Least favourite probably was the Tua one. Have we?
100%. I'm still getting over that one today, but one thing I do know is David was a better man that night. 100%.
Yeah, sadly it happens, doesn't it? I mean, best boxer, we've talked about well, you probably answer this one too. Your favourite boxer then would be
Holyfield. Yeah.
What about in New Zealand, other than yourself? If you're sitting there saying, you know,
I'm still, even though I fought David, I'm a massive fan of him. Yeah,
amazing. Venues, is there a particular place to box that you say, either locally or around the world, that's the place?
Yeah.
And either you fought there or you wish you had.
Yeah, I fought in a place when I, as an amateur, York Hall, Bethnal Green. So that's probably a really infamous, famous boxing arena.
Where's that again? I should know. I'm embarrassed to ask you. Where's that?
London.
London, yeah.
London, York Hall, Bethnal Green. Sorry, yeah, London, yeah.
Amazing. Oh, fantastic. I'll have to go. Do they do regular bouts there?
Yeah, they do.
If I just smaller
shows,
London
smaller
for a week
shows,
or two,
but
I'd probably see something.
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
And I'm just looking at you. I mean, you're still bloody fit, mate. You know, I see the guns and the tats. I mean, they're Māori designs. I don't think it's politically correct to say part Māori either, but I'm part Māori. You're part Māori.
Yeah.
What are the tats of Māori? What do they mean to you? Are they sort of something, or were they just cool designs that you saw and you went with? Or
no, they were gifted to me from our kaumātua from back home. I whakapapa up back to Rongomai Wahine and Mahia. So, I've actually got 7 stingrays tattooed on me, which are the guardians that guard the waters out of Mahia. So I'm the only one that's been gifted this tāmoko. So, very proud to carry it. Not just something that I just seen.
Amazing.
Not like, anyway, there's another story, but anyway.
No, well, thank you for that. You're going to name someone else.
Oh, no, I got a Mike Tyson story when he's talking about
his. Oh, because he's got one, isn't he?
Yeah, but I tell you, so we were down there sparring. And we weren't sparring. We're talking. I said, the tattoo on your head, like where'd you get that from? He goes, it's like a Maori design. You know what I mean? It's from the Warriors and New Zealand, the Warriors of the Maori Warriors. And then he started getting a little bit flustered. He goes, ah, fuck, I don't know, man. I just seen it in a magazine and I got it. I don't give a shit, man. It's my prerogative. And I was like, oh shit, what's prerogative mean?
Yeah, shit, is that right? I thought you were gonna tell me he saw yours, and he's like, I need one of those.
Nah.
Yeah, it's like that just reminds me of what's that movie, Hangover?
Hangover,
yeah. You know, it's all going well till you wake up in Bangkok with like a tattoo over your face. Yeah. And of course, he was in Hangover 2, was he, with the tigers
and
so on?
That's
and
right,
No, they were some of the best movies of their time. But anyway, that's got nothing to do with what we're talking about. And you know, being Māori, does that mean much to you?
Because
through your mother?
Yeah, it's from my mum. Yeah, all my wahine. I'm on a bit of a reo journey at the moment. You know, I'm very proud of our heritage and I want to pick up the reo, so I'm fluent.
How would you say it is at the moment on a scale of 1 to 10? Are you a
one?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So I do night classes. I've done for the last 12-14 weeks.
Amazing.
So I'm slow learning, but I'm when I got my mind set on something, I'll do it. My daughter goes to Kōanga Reo, so she speaks Māori, and my partner's she speaks Māori, so I'm just the only one that doesn't.
Karawe, there you go. That's about 50 words that I've got, so I'm just disclosing. If you're one, I'm probably about 0.75. Yeah, I've tried quite hard in the past, but it's a bit of an effort, isn't it? Your story, I mean, you mentioned you grew up in I think that's somewhere I've never been. I thought I'd been everywhere as a politician in this country.
Yeah.
What was your childhood like? Was it a good one or?
Yeah. No, mate. I was like, we were brought up in a place called Tiniroto, which is basically a pub. Tiniroto consists of a pub and a school and main amenities, right? So we had 35 kids in the whole school at that time. It's still going. The kids, I think we've got about 7 kids in the school now. It's decreased a lot, but great community. Like I said, from a young boy growing up, all I wanted to do was to be a shepherd, you know, and then the turning point of my life. And that's how I ended
up. Was your dad a farmer?
Nah. We weren't fortunate enough to have a farm. You know, mum and dad still live there.
Yep.
Great place. Loved it. Loved the place. Loved the community. Loved the farming industry. I worked on 3 big sheep and cattle stations before I went off to England for my OE, but never come back.
Fantastic. And you know, you I think I'm right. I saw somewhere you left school at 13. So you know, was sport a big thing for you or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. It wasn't big on the sport, but schooling wasn't for me, so my only option was to for sport, but not at any great level. Just played club level for rugby. It wasn't until I went to England.
Oh, is that right? I was going to ask you, how did you get into the boxing?
Yeah, so turning point, because I was farming and I never thought I'd do anything else, and one of my dogs died and then another one nearly died and they'd eaten some rat poison. And if that hadn't happened, I definitely wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. It was a turning point for me. I'd think, I might go to England. I could still do my work, but I thought I might go to England for my OE for 6 months, and then I'll just check out and see what it's like, and then I'll come back and carry on farming because that's all I knew. And I'll go to England and having a good time over there, and a major turning point there, watching some boxing on TV, inspired by my grandfather. My grandfather used to box out of Wellington in the late 1920s. I was always inspired by listening to his boxing stories. I thought, man, I'd love to give that sport a go. And that turning point, watching boxing on TV in England, I'm going, I want to give that sport a go. And then my world just changed. You know, went from drinking 5-6 nights a week.
Because did you find quite quickly you were really good at it? Or was it more of a longer journey to kind of, you know?
No, it happened really fast, man. Like, honestly.
You got in the ring and you were beating people.
Yeah. So I trained for 3 months and then had my very first fight the week of my 20th birthday. And then a year and a half later, I was ranked number 3 in England. Not long after that, I won a national title. And it all happened real fast. And then another 2 more years after that, I won a bronze medal for New Zealand at the Commonwealth Games and turned pro. And away you go.
Amazing. I want to talk to you about life after boxing because that's pretty interesting. And I think it's always fascinating to hear from people, you know, who've done something at a high level. But then it's like, what the hell do you do, right? And you've done well at it. But do you have anything in your boxing career? You look back at it all and it's, we've talked highlights, so on, and lowlights, but you got any regrets, or would you do it the same, basically?
Nah. You know, people have asked me that, but I wouldn't change anything. Like, different time, different era. And I say, oh, man, I wish I would have started younger. You know, if I'd have started, like, at sort of 15, 16. But then, yeah, anyway, that would have been giving me another good 5-6 years And probably another thing, I just wish I didn't break my hand, because that just... Yeah, set me on.
And you fought with broken hands, right?
Yeah.
He broke it. Yeah. It was one of the ones, was it Green or who was it? One of them.
Yeah, it was a couple of fights. No, it was another one. It was a heavyweight fight when I first broke it, you know. So just, yeah, injuries, because injuries can just set you back, eh? You break, so I broke it 7 times. So then it's 14 operations. So it's recovery.
Other broken bones?
Sorry?
Other broken bones? Nah. Just the hand?
Yeah, just the hand.
Same hand every time?
Same hand every time. Yeah.
Well, that's the problem, is that once you've got once it happened once,
it just offsets all the knuckles. And then, you know, when you've got some heat on your punches and then it lands, it just, then all of a sudden it's like, probably reduced probably 10 fights of me. And, you know, just because you got to recover and then missing out on fights. But anyway, it's.
Yeah, well, I suppose no point having regrets. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Today you're a businessman and entrepreneur, and you know, the thing about boxing, it's a crazy career, really, because you know, there's these big money. I think the so-called fight of the century, you got $500,000 for losing. Got that right?
Yeah.
And but I presume, and that sounds like, you know, even today, that's a lot of money, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more than 99% of Kiwis earn a year, or you know, probably in 2 or 3 years. But like, I imagine what also is true is you got these hangers on, and that $500,000 goes quite quickly. Is that fair, or
not in my case?
Did you come out with money? I mean, I'm not saying gajillions, but did you come out, you know, having done well financially?
Yeah. Not compared to the money that the fighters get today, but I'm being very good with my money, buying property, and you know, and bought my first, you know, house for $600,000in Mount Albert after
and
the tour fight.
It's worth a bit more than that.
Yeah, well, I sold it and tripled my money, and then you know, bought a couple others. So like, yeah, just being a bit smarter around with my investments, eh?
Oh, fantastic. Because my sense, you know, of boxes as a generalization is not that it's easy come, easy go, because it's a hard life in some ways, but like they can make massive money.
Yeah.
But you know, you hear these horror stories of guys who made 50 million or something.
Massive.
And then none of it at the end. I could be wrong about this, but I think Tyson, right? I think that's the sort of way it is. So good on you. And your businesses, Shane Cameron Fitness and Northcote and Counterpunch Fitness app, and I see it on your shoot there. Tell me about those businesses and how they're going.
So the gym, I've had that for Shane Cameron Fitness, had that for over 10, 12 years. So that was the first starting. And then, you know, I don't know, I'm ADD and I'm full on, so my brain can't focus sometimes. So I'm always onto something. And then, you know, I created the boxing brand Counterpunch. So I sell, I get products manufactured offshore and then sell them online. And then since from the lockdown, created a fitness app. So 18 months later from lockdown, the first lockdown that we all had, launched a fitness app called Counterpunch Fitness around, you know, helping people stay in shape, get in shape, lose weight, feel good, and just has the digital space, you know. So from the old farm boy, now I'm laptops and all these sort of things going on. You know, couldn't read or write, dyslexic.
But like, businessman, you're a long way from being a human. Boxing's sort of trendy now, isn't it? Would you say it's trendy than it's been? I feel like it's quite, you know, you've got all these boxing clubs that have popped up everywhere, and you know, it's more women, more young people. Is that sort of what you're seeing?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you totally agree, Simon. It's like, there's some other places set up, and it's trendy, it's cool, and it's like the hip place where you're sharing, I've just trained here and
phenomenal fitness.
It's so good for your fitness, because it's really low impact on your body. You know, it's not like CrossFit's pretty hard on your body, but you know, so it's like something like boxing, you're like, man, as long as you've got don't have sore wrists or any elbows issues, but you're great, you know. It's just pretty low impact on your body, you know. It's good fitness for your shoulders, especially for the girls. It tones your shoulders up and all that sort of stuff, and even for the men too, you know. So
fantastic. I feel like I might have a heart attack in the first 8 minutes, but no, it's a guy, we have to consider that. What's being a businessman like? Does that sit well when I say that? Do you feel like you're a businessman? Because you are a businessman.
I don't know, man. Like, sometimes I feel like I haven't achieved anything in that way. A lot of the time, it's like that's a fight that I have with me a lot, you know, that I haven't really achieved much, you know. So, because I used to always think it was quite good, you know, never be content, never be content. But
But it affects happiness, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, yes, you did, right. You did, right. It affects
happiness. There's a lot of people who are happy to have done nothing, Shane, so don't worry. Yeah. But you've done a lot more than nothing. I'm not saying that. But
thank you. And, like, man, it's a challenge. It challenges my head, and my partner just stresses her out because she's just like, man, you've done this, you've done that. I said, yeah, but I still don't think I've done anything.
Because I saw it might have been Horbin's Weekly or something, you saying something along the lines of you two, it might not have been quite in these words, but you two talk about sort of mental health every day.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. And is that because of what you've just been saying to me? You sit there dissatisfied and you have problems, you know, with your inner mind sort of game sense or?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know I had ADD until I was what do you call it when they find out you've got it, you know, a couple of years ago. So I'd have big downers. I'd go for like 4 weeks and just be like, man, I'm just charging through work and getting everything done. And then I just don't want to get out of bed for like a week. Just don't want to get out of bed, not motivated. And I'm just like, fuck, what's wrong with me? You know, so it was, went to the doctors and they diagnosed me with ADD and then they put me on some Ritalin and that was all right for like maybe a couple of weeks. And then I started getting angry, you know, and the doctor's just like, oh, just take more. I'm like, okay, take more. And I'm thinking, you know, I had bad thoughts in my head. I just want to, you know, so I just got off all of it. And just.
And what do you find helps now? What regulates you or keeps you on the straight and narrow?
Sleep.
Good sleep. How sleep, many hours are we talking sleep. A day? Good 8.5 hours of sleep or something like that?
Yeah. Good. Yeah. And then sometimes like, generally I need my sleep. I need my sleep, man. Like with me, with no sleep,
I think we all do. I think these people who pretend that they don't, they're wallies. But I saw a fantastic quote for you from you. I don't know where I found this, but quote, if you ask me why would be to show that boxers aren't just dumb boxers. Yeah. They can be successful in and out of the ring. I don't have an education. I'm dyslexic. I really struggle with my reading and writing. I'm ADD. I'm all over the place. But I can really focus and achieve great things when I put my mind to something. So it's not really a question there, but I mean, I think what I'd say is you're number 6 in the world, bro.
Yeah.
It's some amazing guys. You won a whole lot more than you lost, and now you're a successful businessman. It could be worse.
Thank you.
And, and husband and father. There was a lot we were going to, other things I was going to talk to you about, your current training regime, being a celeb on Dancing with the Stars, I think Celebrity Treasure Island, all this stuff. Any more celeb shows in your future, do you think?
I wouldn't say no. You know, I wouldn't do Dancing with the Stars again though. Man, so tough.
Because I've done one or three, but I said no to Dancing with the Stars.
How hard is
that, eh? No, I've said no to Dancing with the Stars. It's just because that for me would just be an absolute recipe for humiliation. What's the future hold, do you think then?
More
of the same or
more of the same, But I've got a couple of goals around where I want to, I'm not from Auckland, I'm from Gisborne bound, but I won't go back there. But I think Auckland's probably just getting a bit too busy for me, but I'm here this time, I've got a few plans, but just got to execute those plans. But I've got a few things I need to do prior for those plans to be able to become.
That sounds a bit like, you might get back to the farm one day.
Nah, not that far. Definitely not.
But somewhere a bit quieter.
Somewhere a bit quieter. Yeah.
East Coast.
Yeah, head down that way. Even maybe on the outskirts of Tauranga or something like that, because it's my boys down there.
Yeah.
So close to my boy. Yeah.
Yep. Fantastic. Well, I was Member of Parliament there for a long time. It hasn't got quite as good Members of Parliament anymore, but, it's still a nice place. Hey, we're going to wrap up with some questions I ask every guest, and we call this section General Knowledge. I don't know if you're prepared for these. I hope you didn't. Some of them are a bit ridiculous, but we'll see how we go. If you could be somebody else for a day, who do you reckon you'd be?
And I'm a country boy, and this is quick fire. Clint Eastwood.
Fantastic. Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
Should he? He's like about.
Yeah.
He must be like 90.
200.
Sort of, 208 or something. And his wife's about 23 or something.
Oh, really?
I know. I don't know that, but I think it's like. Anyway.
Yeah. Second wave, good story. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, fair enough. He's a legend.
Yeah.
What's your most embarrassing moment?
Yeah. I don't even have
it. I mean, I presume you don't get stuck in a sort of a boxing ring with your pants down or anything because the Velcro, whatever it is, not the Velcro, what do you call that stuff? The elastic in them is pretty good.
Yeah.
They're very long, those boxing shorts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my ones were, yeah. It's because I know legs are going to cover them up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't have a big quads.
Right.
Nah, just joking.
No embarrassing moments you think?
No. Like, I was trying to think of it when I was driving here, and it was just like only thing when I don't like letting people down. And I when I first bought the gym, it was just up a side road, and we didn't have any staff. It was like I took the morning class once a week, and I slept in. I slept in, so like there's about 50 people waiting outside the gym trying to get in, and then ringing my phone, but my phone was on silent, and then I finally got down there, and like fucking everyone was gone, and like I was like, oh my god, yeah. So that was.
I've done that a time or five myself. You know, it's like just you're meant to be somewhere. You know, for me, it was often giving a buddy keynote speech or something in front of 500 people. I'm just, it's like I completely forgot about that, and I can't go now because I haven't got a speech to give them, right? It's like good. I can't just walk in and sort of start talking crap for 40 minutes. That happened a number of times in the old career. Anyway, so sort of similar. If money was no object, what are the first three things you'd buy? Two or three, doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. I'd buy I don't know. I love houses. Yeah, I love houses. I just buy like a nice house, really nice house, and then I'll buy maybe an equally nice house for my mum and dad.
Nice.
And that's it.
Fantastic. Which actor, famous actor, would play you in the movie of your life?
Sylvester Stallone.
Well, he's already sort of done that, hasn't he?
Because that
movie did a lot for all those movies. They really shaped the way people think about boxing, aren't they? Yeah. Any other great boxing movies you can think of?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah, they're the big ones.
There are some. There's the Irish Mickey Ward that played. Yeah, I'm not really good with names. I forget my.
Right.
I forget, but yeah.
I like it. Well, Clint Eastwood, Sylvester Stallone, you're doing well. Have you got any? I would struggle with this, but can you think of any strange traditions in your family? See anything your family does that's a bit out of the ordinary?
So my daughter lives in Palmerston North, and my son's in Tauranga. So when they fly up, I've just sort of created the tradition just because I don't eat junk food really. But we go to McDonald's.
Nice.
At the airport, go to McDonald's, and I catch up with them, and then they know, are we going to McDonald's? When I pick them up, I go, you hungry? They go, yeah, we're going to McDonald's. I go, yeah, they're going to McDonald's. So we go over the same McDonald's every time we sit there, and then I might have something or I don't, and they just pick out.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, no. Mate. Yeah, exactly.
No, absolutely. And if you could choose to stop aging at any age, what do you reckon you'd choose?
Oh, mate, when I seen that, it's got to be now.
Yeah. How old are you? Like about 40?
46.
46. Yeah, you're 46. Younger than me.
Yeah.
You're in somewhat better shape, but we won't go there. Oh, that's fantastic. Hey, Shane, it has been absolutely awesome having you on, man. We really have appreciated it. You've been listening to Generally Famous Stuff podcast. There's a new episode every Wednesday. You can listen to them all at stuff.co.nz/generally famous or wherever you get your podcasts. In fact, if you follow us on Apple or Spotify, any of the podcast apps, you'll get to the latest episode automatically. Sounds good, right? Thanks to my producers, Chris Reed and Jen Black, and audio editor John Rupiah. I'm Simon Bridges. I really appreciate you listening.
This pod took time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories, or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read from Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture, and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.